This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. This episode is an excerpt from my public access TV show, Talk with TQ. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I have a guest this evening that I'm really honored to have on the show. As I've always promised, I try to get the most interesting people on this show that I can find on the planet. Well, we really hit the jackpot today because this gentleman is someone who inspires me. His story is extraordinary. His name is Robert Chelsea. Robert Chelsea is the only Black full face transplant recipient in the world. Yes, you heard me right. And he's here to talk to us about the journey that he's taken to actually get to this point and be on my show. I'm really excited about it. He's so gracious, and he's had an experience that wasn't so great that turned out to be actually wonderful. Robert, thanks for being on the show. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Toni.
Now, you know, you had a terrible thing happen to you, and it was just one of these things that no one ever expects it to happen. You had a terrible accident some time ago, and you survived it, but you went through some changes because of the accident. Do you mind telling the audience about what happened?
I'd be glad to. I think I should preface this by indicating that to some, it was a terrible accident. However, to others, for an example, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, if you know anything about the Bible, they were thrown in a fiery furnace. They did not see it as terrific or horrible, nor did Daniel being thrown in a lion's den, or, for that matter, Joseph, his brothers attempted to bury him alive, and then he was falsely accused, thrown in prison, and look at what God has done for them. So, all that we might perceive that was terrible, horrible, obviously not expected, yet God saw fit. He allowed man to throw him in the lion's den, King Nebuchadnezzar. He allowed the Pharaoh to throw him in prison and not believe what Joseph had said. And so I was in an auto accident. A drunk driver ran into me, and I happened to be on the shoulder of the freeway. My car had overheated, and I pulled over and called a friend of mine at the time. And I say at the time, unfortunately, he actually, about 4 years ago, unfortunately, he was fixing someone's car. They got in an argument. The lady actually threw gasoline on him. And he caught on fire and unfortunately succumbed to become a, he did not survive the burns. But me, my car blew up when the drug driver swerved over to the shoulder of the freeway. I saw him coming. I could see in my side view mirror, and he ran straight into me. My car went up in the air and came down about, I don't know, maybe 10 or 11 seconds later, it just blew up. And so it seemed like the Lord just said, go to your left. And there was the fires, of course, was all over in the car. But I went to my left, and it was like a tunnel, big, long tunnel of fire. But some kind of way, I got out, and a good Samaritan, who his name Richard, eventually, we became very close. We are very close friends. But he was there to assist me to a safer area, because when I got out, cars were still flying by, again, we're on the freeway, so cars are still flying by. He helped to try to escort me to a different area. He told me he tried to take my arm, but he couldn't because my arm was melted.
Oh, my God.
So he grabbed my belt buckle and escorted me over. I did feel some burns in my lips and mouth and chin and a few areas on my body, but I didn't realize how severely I was burned at the time. I was conscious all that time, and then, of course, ambulance arrived, and I told them who to call and so on, and laid on the gurney in the ambulance, and I thought somebody would just come by and pick me up after I was checked out from the hospital. It turns out that I stayed in the hospital when I was in a coma for the first 6 months. So when I laid on the gurney, I fell asleep and I didn't wake up 6 months later.
Wow. Was that like a medically induced coma? Because I know sometimes when people are in such horrible pain, when their situations are so critical, often they induce a coma for specifically, I don't know exactly, I'm not a medical person, but I do remember reading that it's really to help save you so that you're actually in the state that your body is not in trauma anymore.
Depending on the individual, but what I've been told was, I don't know, they may have induced partially and then I don't know, but I stayed in there much longer than what was expected. As a matter of fact, what the initial burn center did, they kept me for the first 4 months from August 2013 until December. I was still in a coma. They had done all that they could do in terms of my survival of the burns, and my organs weren't getting any better, so you know, they did not expect me to live. And as a result, they sent me to a long-term center. That long-term center, I was there from somewhere in December until February, where I woke up from the coma. So was it induced? Maybe partially, I don't know. But it certainly wasn't when I woke up. It wasn't induced all that time. When I woke up, of course, I didn't realize that I had been in a coma. My whole journey at that time was that I knew someone that was so close, and they always conveyed to me that my daughter was doing okay. They kind of keep me updated on how things were going. I would ask about certain ones, but I never got a chance to see them. I just got the reassurance that they were okay. This was through this very, very close best friend of mine that I did not realize I was in a coma with. And so when I woke up, the only way I knew I really woke up was nurses and doctors and friends started coming over, rushing over, and you know, in elation, gratitude, you know, saying that, oh, this is the miracle man. He's alive. He woke up. He's, you know, and all the jubilation that took place for several weeks. And they just tried to convince me that I was in a coma. But I just couldn't, you know, these other new people, and they knew my name. They called me by my nickname, which was Bobby. You know, my name was Robert, so nickname was B-O-B-B-Y. They're calling all these names. I don't know these people. You know, were they finally convinced me after about 2 or 3 weeks that I was actually in a coma?
Wow. But you seem to know what a coma was, and of course. I cannot imagine. I've experienced, you know, loved one once in a coma when I was a very young child. And I do remember that I was speaking to her while she was in the coma. And I felt almost that she knew everything I was saying. What was it like, though, to wake up and find out that you have to have this transplant of your face?
Well, I woke up in 2014. I was actually in the hospital a year and a half. So from August 2013 until the end of 2014. I was in the hospital, in various hospitals. They sent me here for 3 weeks for something, and then they sent me to another to get amputations, and my head retreaded, and then, you know, sent me to another place for recovery and rehabilitation and all these kind of things. So when I got discharged, that was in the end of 2014, I stayed with my sister for the next 3 years, at least 3 years. And during that time, of course, I was in and out of many hospitals to get checked on, because my insurance, Obamacare, was the greatest insurance that I didn't have any, and Obamacare took care of virtually everything that I needed. And you're talking about a person that's burned from top to bottom. My lips were burned off, part of my tongue, and other portions. And as a result of that, we went to a lot of different hospitals. We went to a lot of different clinics, different specialists, burn specialists, dermatologists, plastic surgeons, and so on. So when I finally joined Kaiser Permanente, I had the fortune of meeting the doctor, Walter Chang, who is now a friend of mine as well. He knew a friend of his that had studied under my surgeon, the Dr. Bolden Pamaha, who was the premier face transplant surgeon in the world, located at Brigham Women's Hospital at that time, which is in Boston. Actually, it's the Harvard University Medical Research Lab. I began to talk with them. They called me. Actually, I never really made any effort to them, but they did call me. They felt like, you know, they should discuss it with me. I came to Boston for 3 days, and that went real well. Went back again for about 5 days. A lot of evaluations, a lot of, why would you want something like this? Why would you want to allow your body to go through this kind of surgery when you've gone through, you know, all the other experiences? But when we got through all of that, I realized that the face transplant would be my best option to be able to have a degree of functionality, because the plastic surgeons all agreed that the only thing they could really do was give me a covering on my lips. They would not have any movement, or I would not be able to control them nerve-wise. And of course, it would protect my teeth and my gums, you know, and things like that. But I was hoping to have an opportunity to kiss my daughter's cheeks again. And also an opportunity, obviously, to eat in a more normal fashion, to drink in a more normal fashion, and so on. Because all those years that I was recovering from the burns, I was actually drinking out of a syringe, a 60-millimeter syringe. I drink, tilt back and drink. I could show you the syringe if you'd like.
You obviously had such a will to live, you know. I think that has a lot to do with the fact that you're here, you know, that you had such a will to live and you survived. You actually educated me when you sent me an email yesterday or the day before, and you explained a lot about the process, and you talked about other types of transplants. I thought it was very generous of you to even mention that, because I know that we have interviewed people that have had kidney transplants, and we've interviewed the donors. In your case, that you had to get your transplant from someone that had passed on, but you used a term that I had not heard from the other people I had interviewed, and you used the term transplant technology. Talk about that.
Well, there's so many transplanting stem cells, for an example. They can actually eliminate sickle cell with the proper stem cells. Bone marrow, those are all considered transplantation. Those are all considered means of transplanting. One eye can save 8 other eyes. One eye. And at least 75, I'll put it this way, at least 70, depending on who you talk with, 70 or 75, other parts of that individual's body can save someone else. So as a result of that, I refer to this as increasing our awareness for transplantation for our general, what I call, disabled diaspora. I do not see this as an ethnic issue. I see it, there is no, you're in New York, I'm in Los Angeles, I could just as well be in Nairobi, I could just as well be in Asia somewhere. And there are, I think there are disabled in Asia too, aren't there?
There are disabled people everywhere.
Every single place on earth. And as a result of that, we must encourage all our scientists, all our researchers, all of our students, our physicians that are young enough to be flexible, to change, to consider transplanting in their own country, their own city, state, and so on. I don't mean just practicing transplantation, but obviously I'm talking about something that's not only legal, but medically approved. And as a result of that, we can have a brand new society that's functional. Not only that, their self-esteem, they're able to now be an integral part of their own community. They can be breadwinners again and so on. So that's what that technology can do.
We're such a, I'd say, appearance-oriented society in most cases. I'd say in Asia, I believe they're not as much that way as we are here in the United States. But I can only imagine how you felt, you know, knowing that you're going to have to get, or not have to, but that you were lucky enough, I'll say it this way, to get somebody else's face. It's not just a skin transplant. It's the entire face, your nose, all the features. And I'm wondering if you ever had the opportunity to meet the family of the donor that had passed on, because, you know, you did share your age with me, and the donor had to be younger because your skin looks great. I have to tell you, you look great. The skin looks so smooth and dewy, but you did share your age with me, if you want to share it with the audience, because you said that you were the oldest face transplant recipient the only Black total transplant recipient.
Well, to address the family, I sincerely appreciate their heart sharing with me their loved one's face. We're looking at something that you can't show from a casket. You can't put a picture on it. And yet this face, the family consented to share their loved ones with me. I have not yet met them. Hopefully this year I'm strong enough now where I would love to stand with the family and actually spend some time getting acquainted with them. That would be a special treat for me.
I imagine it would be a treat for them as well.
I would suspect so. They have indicated that they wanted to meet me. This was several years back, just right after making that decision to donate their loved ones. But I do want to say that I don't see that as luck at all, nor do I see it as a courageous move on my part. There is, people have terms like fortune, but I can also feel safe in saying God has a way of gifting, blessing, providing. He gives abundance more than we could ask or imagine. And so I don't think that I was lucky to come out the crash and all the burns. God could have let the car swerve around me. So I would have seen that and still rejoiced. But yet he let me go in the fire. He let me go into the valley. He did that. As a result of that, I have to give him credit for caring for me through this valley experience. He is a perfect gentleman. You want to meet a gentleman? He is a perfect. He laid it out for me. You heard about valley experiences and mountaintop experiences, but when you're in the valley, you know, I can assure you there are lilies in the valley. That wasn't luck, no coincidence, no bravery on my part. What can I do? What could I have control of? I wasn't even conscious. And if I were, what would I be able to? You and I have been in situations today that weren't so serious, and yet we couldn't figure out what to do. How much more when you're actually in a... So I have to. There's no way around not realizing that God has allowed me to go. He carried me through, and he's raising me up. Nothing I could do about that.
You quoted scripture, and I felt it was very metaphoric to your situation. You quoted scripture about it, and I know the stories that you mentioned. And, you know, I hadn't thought about that when I read your story, but now I kind of see it. So people of faith, you know, you're actually a living example of, I guess, the validity of those stories and how they apply to your life. And I would love to know psychologically, what kind of changes did you go through? Because now you have a different face. It's someone else's face. You're going to meet their family. They're going to see their loved one's face on you. And I'm really pleased to know that they want to do that, because I would love to be a fly on the wall for that meeting. Oh my God, I would love that.
Well, I will too. Psychologically, I don't know. And I'm not sure that it's necessary for me. I think the after effect, after meeting, then I can share how I felt at the time. But it's hard for me to anticipate what my next day or step will be. And I'm so glad that that portion of concern that's natural, it's out of the way. He's given me such a peace about it. I'll use this maybe another metaphor. David, in 23rd Psalms, he spoke of, though he walked through valleys and shadows of death, he feared no evil. And we know that that wasn't because he was just a brave man, because he was a warrior. But he didn't have to fear evil because God was with him. You can take it or leave it. You can disbelieve it. You can question it. You can doubt it. But David, I realized that David really wasn't just being poetic. He wasn't as nice as his words had been throughout the book of Psalms. And this man was confessing, he was testifying that God was with him. And as a result of what I got, it wasn't a doubt now about, well, this was nice. I can believe what David said. I could trust those words. I can have faith. No, you know, sometimes you have to know certain things. And I know because he was with me. And then he also referred to shadows of death. I assure you, Tony, it's a wonderful thing to know that those, most of what we have gone through, because you've gone through somewhere, but they were shadows. They didn't overtake you. They didn't leave you down where you couldn't get up. And you're still here today. So those were shadows. I'm so glad that these experiences have been that for me.
I believe that the coma that you were in for all those months was a gift. I'm just from what I feel in my heart is that when people are in a coma, it's an opportunity to let your body just be at rest, but still be alive so you can heal and then you can be close to the divine. You know, it's a strange kind of twist. Not everybody could get into that kind of thinking, but, you know, I do hear what you're saying and I can empathize to an extent with it because I've experienced being near someone that was dear to me more than one occasion that was in a coma. And I could just sense that they were being protected. You know, Robert, I want you to come back on the show after you meet the family, if you wouldn't mind. I would love to talk to you about that experience. You're just such an incredible inspiration. I think you're an inspiration for anybody, just the fact that you experienced what you experienced, which was so horrific, and then you came out whole on the other end, you know, and that you still maintain faith. It doesn't seem to have bittered you at all.
Bittered me? No, for what he has done, when you meet your dream come true, if you will, how could you be bitter?
Right.
When you have a chance to actually live and breathe and walk and I don't want to trade what I had 60 years ago, but I've been there. Do you want that back? It's such a beautiful opportunity for what I see today. Not only that, my eyes have been enlightened in such a way I can appreciate the disabled, as I refer to it as diaspora, what they're going through. Look at what I would have been naive in so many ways had I not had these kind of experiences. So I am more than grateful. I would not want to trade this experience. I'm missing this and I don't have that and I can't do this. But what what he has provided is, it's almost like we've all probably seen different fish and plant life and animals that are on the surface, but I'm told there are equally as many beautiful animals and plant life and fish that's under the sea, in the depths of the sea, that you and I may not ever see. Well, it's kind of like what I've gone through. It's equally, if not far more beautiful.
Your faith is an evidence, and it's not my quote, your faith is evidence of the things unseen. And you're such an inspiration, Robert. I'm wondering, do you do any kind of public speaking? Where can someone find you to maybe even send a text message or email to you? Is that okay?
Of course it is. Yes. We have established a foundation 4 years ago before my face transplant. It's called Robert Chelsea Foundation.
RobertChelseaFoundation.org?
Yes. Uh-huh.
RobertChelseaFoundation.org. And I can tell you, Chelsea is spelled C-H-E-L-S-E-A. And you are just like an inspiration to me. You know, every time you think you have a big problem, it's not really that big, because as I see from talking to you, is that your faith is evidence of things unseen and you can get through anything in life. I want to have you back on the show for sure. We do want to have you back, and thank you so, so much. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
I am so happy for you, you know, and I cannot wait to see this video so that the whole world will see it and be inspired by your experience. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Have a good night.
Okay. I will. You too.
Thank you. And I'll say good night to the audience. Be well. Be safe. Please be nice to each other, okay? Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.